Some years back, I was in Salt Lake City, and they have something there called a gift circle. So once in a month, I think it's on a Wednesday, and they meet in the evening, just like this. Anybody can come, and you have a round of just sharing. In fact, before you start, 15 minutes, people are just talking around. The session doesn't even begin. They're serving some sandwiches or something. And it's called a gift circle. So in this session, what happens is, in the first half, people share anything that they're looking for. Could be anything. Like, I'm looking for a walking buddy. You know, I go for these long walks, I feel a little lonely, anybody wants to join me. Or I'm doing a little construction project at home, and I'm missing an electric, a little power saw. Can I borrow someone's power saw? And someone else, my kid is coming of age, and the old games don't work anymore. And if somebody has some games that my kid could use, I'd like them to buy new ones. I don't want to waste money. And the second half, people share what they want to give. So first half of anything that you need, and second half of what you want to give. And everybody already come with their list. I've got some old books lying around, or I've got this. And you wanted that chainsaw, I've got a chainsaw lying around, you can borrow it from me. And so what happens is, the first half, everybody goes around, shares something that they need. And the second half, something that they're willing to give. And most people, one way or the other, find either a direct solution for what they're wanting, or some indirect solution. My friend has it, or something like that. But more than giving and taking, it's actually a chance for us to connect as just people, right? And what happens, especially in Western countries, is everyone gets so isolated, because all you have to do is use your credit card, and then you can just buy anything online. You don't even need to see anyone's face, actually. You can get food online, you can get everything you need online, and you basically work, and then you order everything, and you never really connect with the people around you. And in this case, by actually cutting through that materialism and saying, I do need some things. I don't want to waste money. If you have it, I don't mind taking it. And so it could be something intangible, like going for a walk with someone, or something very tangible, like something that you actually need. And sometimes even expensive things that someone just doesn't need it, it's just lying around. If someone wants it, just take it, right? And so I was that time living in a town close to Salt Lake, called Logan. So we began doing it as well. And so I think we must have had about 10 or 12 such rounds of meeting. We did it more frequently, we did it twice a month. And it was a lot of fun. It was a nice time to really get to know each other. And get to know each other just as real human beings. Because it's normally in society, you never talk about your needs, right? And your wants, you quietly just go and get them. You don't really talk about them. But here, by talking openly about our needs and wants, and also talking about the stuff that's lying around that I don't really need, it was just a chance for energy to start flowing. And it created a sense of community for everybody there. So I'm going to start with a beautiful sound. This is a singing bowl. Enjoy the sound of this bowl. And just use it to get really present. Hear the sound. And bring your attention to the now space, the present moment. And let's just start by closing our eyes, giving a straight back. And I'd like you to remember your birth date. What was the date that you were born? And just imagine for a moment, you've just been born. Imagine what your face looks like. You might have seen photographs of yourself. Otherwise, just imagine what your face looks like. You've just been born. I imagine there's a lot of joy in the family. And from that point onwards, I'm going to help you move from that point to this point in your life. And I want you to notice the changes. After 1 week, after 1 month, just any changes you notice in your life, 6 months. Now it's been 1 year. 2 years. And just imagine, just try to do your best. How have I changed from the time I was born to the time I was 2 years old? 3 years. Let's jump to 5 years. Try to remember yourself at that age. Maybe by now you were going to school, or at least kindergarten. 7 years. Where were you living at that time? What was happening in your life when you were 7 years old? Ten years old? Twelve years old? 15 years old, a picture of that time in your life. 15 years old. Seventeen years old. 20. And like this, moving forward, in gaps of 2 or 3 years, all the way to your present age, we'll take a few minutes and just do your best to remember some of the things that happened, some of the changes that happened internally, externally in your life. Your mind wanders, come back to the exercise and just move ahead. You can either move forward in gaps of 3 to 5 years, 2 to 3 years, or 3 to 5 years, and just get a snapshot. And in the next minute, we will all arrive at our present age. Take your time. And now just be present. Notice the body, the mind, in this present moment. And if you notice very carefully, in this present moment, things are changing. Sounds are changing. Breath is coming and going. Inner thoughts, memories, coming and going. Feelings, sensations, emotions, coming and going. And in every particle of the body, blood is flowing, cells are multiplying, being born and dying. There's constant change, there's constant flow. And just do your best to connect to that change. This living pulsation of life. And try to shift from the story of your life to just life. Try to shift from a person who's living to just the process of living. Life, living life. And just do your best to empty yourself. Completely empty yourself. We'll all take 3 deep breaths. Second is deeper. Third is even deeper. And if you like, you can rub your palms, make them nice and warm. Bring them over your eyes. Bring them over your face. And let's say together, how wonderful.
How wonderful.
Very nice. Welcome, welcome. Good. Welcome. Nice. So we did a small meditation. We went back to the beginning of life, birth. And we just traced from there all the way down to this moment in our life. So a few questions for you. Would you agree that from birth to now, there have been many changes?
Yes.
Yes, right. And this is good for us because sometimes we think, I don't change, you know, I'm the same. I don't change much. I'm just the same kind of person. But the truth is, if you look carefully, there's been huge changes. From the time you were born till now, physically, of course, there have been changes. But there have been so many other changes in your life circumstances, and the people around you. Even in your personality, sometimes there have been very big changes as you've gone along, right? Your priorities have changed, right? So if we begin to realize more, you know, completely that everything is constantly changing. It's less of an intellectual concept. It starts becoming more of a real concept. Things are always changing. And even what is currently true for me is also changing. In this moment, if you get really present, you start finding, in this moment, there's change. So I did a meditation course many years back. I was 16 years old. I did a meditation course. And they kept emphasizing change, change, change. Everything is changing. Everything is changing. And they said, if you're aware of change, then your mind becomes balanced. So, for example, you would sit to meditate. You meditate for 1 hour. And after half an hour, my leg would start to hurt. Then I'd tell my leg, you're changing. You're not going to stay the same. You'll change. This pain will change. But I would still get restless. You're changing. And it wouldn't change. I mean, the pain only increased. You know, it didn't go away, you know. So I asked my teacher, you know, I know it's supposed to change, but my mind still gets restless. He says, because you're thinking about change as opposed to experiencing the change. And you have a preference for it to change in one direction, not the other direction. You want it to change in the direction of less pain and not in the direction of more pain. I said, yeah, that's true. But even the pain increasing is also a kind of change. If it increases, it will also decrease. Right? What comes will also go. So this understanding, it became more real to me when my teacher said, don't just think about change, experience the change. Now, on all our sense doors, you know this, that the reason you can hear is because as I'm speaking, air waves are getting compact and they're opening up. Compact and opening up. And that amplitude, the resistivity of the air wave is what allows you to hear because your eardrums vibrate. So it's the vibration of the eardrums is what you're hearing. And same way with seeing also. The photons of light will stimulate the rods and cones in your eye. That's how you're able to see. Right? Different frequencies will touch your eye in a different way. And same with smell. There are certain subtle molecules, chemicals, pheromones they're called, which then activate your nerve endings inside your nose. You're able to smell. And same with taste. One thing interesting about taste is, did you know that there's actually no taste buds for chili? How are we able to taste something hot and chili? There are actually no taste buds in our tongue for chili. It's actually just burning your tongue. So that's the experience of burning, which we find to be chili. That's actually just burning your tongue. There's actually no taste buds specifically for hot, right? So it's all vibration. All the sense doors are actually vibration, constant change. Now the deeper question is, what is your relationship with change? Do you have a healthy relationship with change? Do you have a dysfunctional relationship with change? Right? Because change is a reality, like it or not. You may even deny it, but still, it's a reality. Right? Now what is your relationship with change? So we're going to play a little game. We're just going to say, fill in the blanks. Change is, fill in the blanks. It could be anything. Change is exciting. You could even say change is scary. Right? Or change is unsettling. So I'm going to start. I'll just say one statement. Change is something. And then we'll pause for about one breath. Just feel what I've said. And then somebody else will say change is, fill in the blanks. And again, pause for one or two breaths. Feel what the person has said. And like this, anybody who wants to share will share. What does change mean to you? What is your relationship with change? And of course, it's a complex relationship. I'm sure there are many aspects to it. You can go more than once. Right. And let's tune into the different thing that people are saying as they think of change. So I'll start. Change is a teacher. Anyone?
Change is uncomfortable.
Let's help people. So I'm going to pass the ball to someone, share what changes, and pass it to somebody else. Come on.
Change is inevitable.
Pass the ball to anybody. Take a breath and pass the ball to anybody.
Change is confusing.
Is?
Confusing.
Yes, confusing.
Change is scary.
And whatever anyone is saying, try to see if you can get in touch with that aspect of change. Change has many aspects.
Change is innocent.
Change is truth.
Change is the truth. Change is constant.
Change is growth.
Change is growth.
Change is good.
Change is good.
Change is life.
Change is life. Let's pause for one breath. Hold the ball for at least a breath. Let us look, let's all feel what you're saying. Then pass it on. Anyone else?
Change is renewal.
Change is renewal. Essence of life.
Change is challenging.
Challenging.
Change is needed.
Change is needed. Change is acceptance. Let's hear from three more. You can go more than once if you like.
Change is a signal.
Change is a signal.
Change
is detachment.
Change is thinking.
Change is thinking.
Change is a craving.
Change is a craving. Anybody else? Pass the ball. Nice. So welcome those who just come. We were doing a little meditation on change and we were asking people to share their perception. Change is what, right? And you saw a whole different variety of what different things change means for us. And of course that can also change. Isn't it? And so, like someone said, change is inevitable. It's there anyway. Now, you can have a healthy relationship with it, or you can have an unhealthy relationship with it. That's a matter of how you associate with it, right? I like what someone said, change is innocent. change is happening, right? Now, you can add to it likes and dislikes. It's very unfair, it shouldn't happen, or it should happen. This is the stuff that we add to it. By itself, it just is what it is. A lot of the reasons why we are living comfortable, safe lives is because somebody else did not have such a comfortable, safe life. And so then we reflected on that and we learned from that. And today we have relatively more comfortable and safe lives, isn't it? So it's actually a very profound thing to reflect on. That the basic idea is, let's say together, whatever arises, also passes away. So Osho had a very nice quote, and he used to say this quite often. He used to say, I live like this is the last day of my life. I live like I have all the time in the world. Now, how he would put both of them together in the same, you know, the same phrase. I live like it's the last day of my life, and I live like I have all the time in the world. And this is a very interesting way of looking at it. So, of course, if it's the last day of your life, I imagine you'll not waste your time. You know, I imagine you'll do things that are really important to you. You'll probably be with the people you love. You'll do things that are really important to you. Chances are every moment will be precious for you. But then within that moment, the fact that you have all the time in the world, you'll not be rushed. So if you and I are good friends, if it's the last day of my life, when I meet you, I'll not be like, okay, you've got 1 minute, you know. Chances are, I'll really look into your eyes, I'll really hold your hand, and I'll speak from my heart what's really important. I'll let you speak from your heart. It'll probably be a deeper connection than ever. Right. And the truth is, we never know. Right. We never know when we're meeting each other for the last time. We really don't know that. So there's something very powerful to have that kind of relationship with change. And of course, the famous phrase, we've all heard this phrase, this too shall pass. Right? What comes, it also goes. So again, when this too shall pass, it means that it gives you strength. When the unpleasant thing that happened gives you strength, it's not going to stay forever. Let me go through this with a balanced mind. For example, you're in a crowded bus and you see an old lady struggling. You get up and you give her the seat. Now, obviously, it's harder for you to stand up because it's not so comfortable anymore. But you know, it's all right. It's going to pass soon. The old lady needs that seat more than I do. It's okay. It's not a big deal. And so you're willing to, because it's a temporary thing. You know, it's a temporary thing. You're willing to face that discomfort. You'd even choose that discomfort and let that old lady have the seat. Because you know it's temporary. In other words, when you know something is temporary, your capacity to face the discomfort gets enhanced. I was just sharing before some of you came that I was just in Shirdi. I'm coming from Shirdi. And I was there in Sai Baba's place. And we met a priest there who gave us a very nice, simple teaching. He said, people come here to pray to Sai Baba to take away their sufferings. He said, but actually Sai Baba's job is not to take away your sufferings. That is not his speciality. His speciality is not to take away or remove your sufferings. His speciality is to give you the strength to face your sufferings. He says, people who come with that understanding leave very satisfied. People who come expecting some miracle will happen and you know everything will go away, it may happen once in a while, but that's not the main point. He says, what Sai Baba's teaching is that you should have faith and you should have patience. Faith that whatever is happening for the good, even though right now it doesn't feel like it. And patience means, there's a lovely, I read somewhere over there that it said, patience is not just waiting. Patience is being, how do you behave while you're waiting? We can all be waiting for the bus and we have to wait anyway. But how are we behaving while we're waiting? Are we getting really upset and angry? Or are we being quite calm while we're at it, right? So the man told us that it's the real blessing of Sai Baba is that he will ease the process. You will still face whatever you have to face. But he will make it much more, you'll be able to face it, you'll be able to digest it. You'll not be as reactive as before. It'll not feel as overwhelming as before. And that's a wonderful prayer. So then you're not praying just to take away the problems. You're praying, give me the strength, the wisdom, the capacity to not face my present challenges. I came across a lovely quote on Facebook which said, we pray to God to take away our problems, our challenges, or change the situation. We pray to God to change the situation, not knowing the situation was given to change us. The situation was given to accelerate us, to awaken us, right? That's a different way of looking at it. So how do we respond? How do we work with change? A story is coming to mind. There was this young boy, and he went to stay with his grandfather. His grandfather lived in the mountains. He had a small hut. And next to a hut was a stream. And his parents said, go stay with your grandfather for some time. So he went to spend a few months with his grandfather. His grandfather had a very disciplined life. So he'd wake up early in the morning, he would meditate, and he would study something inspiring. So there's something in our human life that whoever you associate with, you start becoming like them. So because he saw his father getting up early, meditating, praying, you know, reading these spiritual books, He said, let me also try. So he also began meditating, praying, reading these spiritual books. So a few months went by, and one day he went to his grandfather. And his grandfather was, he had a basket full of coal. And he was putting the coal into the burner. And he went to his grandfather and said, grandfather, I have a question. That every morning, you know, I meditate, I read these books. But actually, that effect doesn't really last. I mean, after a while, I'm back to my wandering mind. I'm back to my, you know, my mind. I mean, I wonder why do we do this? Because for a little while, it seems to be good. But the rest of the day, I don't really see much change, honestly. So why do we do this practice? What's the point? So the grandfather smiled and said, all right, I'll answer your question. But first, I want you to get me some water. Take this basket and get me some water from the stream. So the grandson said, granddad, let me get a bucket. This is not the best thing. You don't get it in this. So he's not sure why his grandfather is saying this. He goes to the basket. He fills it with water. But because, you know, baskets are full of holes. So by the time he can come back, all the water is gone. He said, grandfather, this is the wrong thing. Let me get a bucket, I'll get the water. He says, no, get it in the basket. You're not coming fast enough. Come faster. He said, what are you saying? So he goes again he fills it. He comes at full speed. Again, the water is gone. He said, grandfather, this is the wrong thing. Let me get a proper bucket. He says, no, do it one more time. If you really do it fast, you can get it. He doesn't want to argue with his grandfather, but he knows it's not going to work. He says, okay, grandfather, just to please you, I'll do it one more time. But after that, I'm not going to do it. So he goes, he fills it, he runs as fast as he can. But sure enough, by the time he reaches, all the water is gone. He said, grandfather, it's a total waste of time. So grandfather smiled and said, look at the basket. When you first took it, what was it? He said, it was covered with black. It was full of coal. Now, after 3 trips, what's happened? It's become completely clean. So he said, it looks like nothing happened, right? Because you went up and down, the water all got leaked. Now water stays inside. But something has happened. The basket has become cleaner. So in the same way, sometimes it appears, what's the point? You know, I meditate, I read these books, I come for lectures. What's the point? Nothing's really changing. But something is changing. Some basic foundation of your mind is changing, which we can't always observe. You know, our mind is notoriously bad at checking our own progress. It's notoriously bad. Which is why very often you'll give up, very early you'll give up, and no, nothing's happening. It's a waste of time, nothing's happening. So many people start languages and they give up. So many people start new things. I'm sure Atul will tell us how many people sign up for these classes and then what percentage of them actually then eventually come, you know. The entire gymming business is based on this. If you go to any gym, they'll give you amazing offers. For the year, the best offer is for the whole year. It's like unbelievable offer. Because they know that only like 10 or 15% are actually ever going to come. Most people are never going to come after that, right? And that's how they make their business. Because if everybody actually turned up, then their gym would be totally full. But they know how it works, right? Because we tend to be notoriously bad at checking our own progress. We feel that we're not progressing. So it helps to remember the example of the Chinese bamboo tree. The Chinese bamboo tree is special because when you plant it, nothing happens. 6 months go, 1 year goes, nothing happens. 2 years go, 3 years go, nothing happens. And by the fourth year, what a waste of time, let's get this out of here. And just as you're about to get it out of there, in the fourth year, it suddenly shoots up to 80 feet. You know, in the old days, you had the television antennas, you may have seen radio antennas, and you pull them out. At that speed, it grows. And you wonder, what happened? 4 years, nothing happened, suddenly it grew so big. Actually, something was happening the whole time, but you couldn't see it. You see, Chinese bamboo tree grows in one direction first. It builds an enormous root network. And it looks like nothing is happening, but something is happening. It's preparing itself for exponential growth. In that fourth year, it suddenly will grow to 80 feet. So could it be that some of us here are like Chinese bamboo trees? We feel that nothing is happening, nothing is happening, nothing is happening. And then suddenly it happens in a way that we can't expect. So there's a lovely quote that what we call luck is opportunity meeting preparation. See, oh, that person is just lucky. They're not just lucky. Some opportunity met the preparation that they had put in, which is why they're suddenly exponentially doing so well, which for you is just luck, right? It's not always luck. So then are we creating the groundwork, the foundation for that change to come into our life? So what is, again, coming back to what is the relationship we have with change? Change is inevitable anyway. It's going to happen anyway. So one thing that I learned is that we can learn to appreciate change. We can learn to enjoy change. So when the pleasant things are happening, we can really enjoy those things, knowing fully well it's not going to last for long. Right? Knowing fully well. And what change does is it makes you see everything as precious. Every opportunity is precious. It's never going to come again. You see, the way we are sitting now, no matter how hard we try, we will never sit exactly this way again. Because you'll be a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, a little bit front, a little bit back. Something will be different. The time of the day will be different. Your mood will be different. it'll never be exactly the same. So this moment will never ever come exactly the same way ever again. You start to realize that you see every single moment of my life is a fresh moment of my life. And so what we did in the beginning, we played the story, the movie of our life, from the moment of birth down till now. This was the movie of our life. This is the story of our life. So there are two very important distinctions. Please say with me, the story of my life.
The story of my life.
And life.
And life.
So there is what's living right now, and then there's a story of what's happening. Right. So when there are two things, then also it comes down to, the quality of my life comes down to these two things. So please say with me, the quality of my story.
And the quality of my presence.
So at any given moment of your life, you are telling a story about who you are, about what's happening, about where it's taking you. Right. And the same thing can be described in different ways. For example, a father had two twins, and one would always complain, one would always appreciate. And just as a test, on their birthday, which is obviously the same day, he filled one child's room with toys and gifts. And one child, he put shit in the room. Just to see how they react. And the one who always complains, opens the door and sees all these gifts. And he says, oh no. And father said, what happened? He says, so many toys. My friends will be jealous of me now. Right? And the other one opens the room and sees all this shit. He says, oh my goodness, wonderful. Says, what's so wonderful? He says, there's so much shit, there must be a pony somewhere. Dad, where's a pony? There must be a pony somewhere. It's how you look at it, right? The same situation. It's your way of looking at it. It's not what's happening. It's your way of looking at it. It's the same situation in life. Everything can change. It's based on how you look at it. The same restaurant for you, the super ordinary restaurant. For some poor kid, it's the most amazing restaurant they've ever been to in their life. It's the most amazing opportunity ever. A few years back, my brother's... Was it his birthday or his wife's birthday? She decided to, instead of having a normal birthday party with her friends, she decided to go to McDonald's and get kids from an orphanage to come and just, most McDonald's you have a party room. I don't know if you've ever been to McDonald's. I almost never go to McDonald's because I don't like McDonald's. But you see, they have a party room, and the party room was booked just to take these orphans who live away from Pune, and they got them here on a bus, and just 3 hours of eat what you like and play games. And you should have seen the joy on those kids' faces. And for me, it wasn't really, it was like, on one hand, I don't like McDonald's. I have a judgment about McDonald's because I have certain their practices and certain things. But when I see these kids enjoying themselves, for me, it's a place I don't want to go to. But for these kids, it's the most memorable day of their life. And they're coming outside, what's that clown called? And they're taking photographs of the clown. And they're playing all these games. And I'm sure they still remember that day, right? And we all still remember that day. It's not the place. It's your attitude. It's what's happening in that place. It's the way you tell the story. Right. So the two main skills we learn is, how am I telling the story of my life or any situation to be a master storyteller? And the other is the art of being. Being, just being. Not doing, but just being. Doing has its place. But if you're always doing, what? Doing for what? At some point you'll say, but for what? I've been running around for what? At the end of the day, what? Because no matter what you accomplish, the tides of time are going to completely wipe it out. Completely. I read this beautiful story of this, it's called Chakravarti Samrat in India, which translates as universal monarch. So a king who rules the entire planet. It happens very rarely. Once in thousands of years, a king appears who rules the entire planet. So Chakravarti Samrat arises. And his minister tells him one day that, did you know the scriptures say that the Chakravarti Samrat, his name is inscribed on Mount Sumeru. Mount Sumeru is a mythical mountain. It's the most sacred mountain. And Lord Indra himself goes and writes his name because it's such a rare thing for this Chakravarti Samrat. So he says, all right, if that's true, let's go and ask Lord Indra. So he has a special chariot which can fly. It's called Vimana. And he gets in that and he goes to Devlok. And he says, Lord Indra, is it true that Chakravarti Samrat's name is written on the mountain? He says, yeah, it's true. Let's go and do it. We've been postponing this. Let's do it. So they get into the chariot and they go to Mount Sumeru. And they get out and they're looking for a place to write his name. But as they go closer, they find every square inch is filled with names. This is a gigantic mountain. So, you know, we'll find a place. So we start walking around. Half an hour goes, 1 hour. Every square inch is filled with names of previous Chakravarti Samrats, right? Universal monarchs. And it's about to be evening now. Sun is about to set. And the king is about to despair that, you know, he spent the whole day. We could not find a single place to write my name. And all his sense of being so special is totally gone now by this time. And then Lord Indra says, don't worry. There are so many names. Nobody is just looking. Let's wipe out somebody's name and put your name. Who will know? Let's wipe out someone's name and put your name. And the king says, no, please don't do that. Because today you're wiping out somebody's name. Tomorrow they'll wipe out my name. He says, I don't even want my name written over. You see? So what a wonderful story. Which means that no matter what you accomplish, no matter how great you think you are, because we don't even know the names of all the great people in our own country, we don't know the names of all the amazing great people who lived. We don't know their names. Forget about what they did. Even their names are gone. So when that happens, it's not about writing your name on some wall somewhere, on some stone somewhere. Then all you want to do is write your name on the hearts of the people around you. If you have to write your name on someone's hearts, someone's heart. Chances are we remember the people who've touched our lives, whether it was a teacher or a colleague or a relative or a friend. Those people have a special place in our hearts. And even now, if you think of them, a smile will come to your face because they touched your heart. It's not that they came first in some competition or they were came on the front page of the newspaper or the president gave them some award. Those people you often, okay, you say, good for you, yeah, nice. But it's not, those people not bring necessarily bring a smile to your face. The people who touched your life, they bring a smile to your face. Yesterday, my friend shared a video with me. He lives in a place near Bangalore. And they just decided, they run an internet radio show called Satyavani. Sanatan Vani, sorry. And they're often getting people, they interviewed me and they interviewed other people. And they're often getting people to talk about how to live a more skillful life. So they said, okay, we're talking about all of this, we have the radio show. But instead of just talking about it, let's do something. So they got into the car, they went into the neighboring town, it's called Chikbalapur. And they looked for someone who was looking sad. And they found this man standing there, and he's a little bit, his clothes are not looking very good, his face is, got a beard, he's looking kind of sad. So they go up to him and says, sir, who are you? He says, why do you want to know? He says, no, we just want to check on how's your day going, how are you? He says, no, I'm just waiting here. He says, waiting for what? He says, I'm waiting for work. He says, what kind of work? He says, no, I'm a daily laborer. Any work I get, that money is what I use to eat food. He said, so if you don't get money, you'll not eat food. He said, yeah, there are some days I don't get any work. And that day I don't eat any food. He said, but what about family? Who's taking care of you? He said, no, I live alone. He says, you live alone? So then if you get sick, what happens? He said, there's no one to take care of me. And by this time he starts crying. The man starts crying. He says, no, don't cry. Don't you have anybody in the world? He says, I have a son, but my son has broken relationships with me. He doesn't talk to me anymore. He said, you come with us. He says, but where are you taking me? He says, just come. So he gets into the car. And he's probably, don't know when in his life he's ever been in an air-conditioned car. So he's going in an air-conditioned car, they're chatting with him. So how do you like the car? He said, it's very nice, it's better than a bus. And I'm enjoying it in the car. So then they get into the ashram where they stay. And then the first thing they do is they give him a nice lunch. And you can see how much he's relishing the food, how much he's enjoying the food. Then after that, they say, okay, we're going to take you to a barber shop. Your hair is all over the place. So then they say he's getting a shave. He's getting a nice haircut. And his appearance changes completely. You can't even recognize the person. Within half an hour, he's gone for a haircut. His complete appearance has changed. They give him some fresh clothes to wear. And they say, we're making a small video on how to spread happiness, on how to make someone's day good. And so he's seeing his own video being edited. He's got a big smile on his face. And they say, you're always outside. Let's give you a pair of sunglasses. They give him a nice pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses. And then they take him back and they leave him there. And he's so happy. He's like, you made my day. It's completely out of the blue. And of course, they haven't solved that person's life problems. But they did something that touched his life. And such a person will have faith that good people exist in this world. Angels, for him, they're like angels, right? Out of nowhere, these angels came. And they just did all this for me, right? So sometimes we feel that, we can kind of get skeptical and cynical. Well, if you can't really change it long term, then why even bother? When a person is hungry, all they need is that one meal. When a person is lonely, all they need is that one hug, that one encouragement. You can't, as if we solve anything forever. What do we really solve forever anyway? Problems will come again. You feed someone, they get hungry again. You clothe someone, they get their clothes get torn. But at least a little bit of difference you can make wherever you are, that much we can do. So there was a man who was an author, and over the years he'd become very cynical, very skeptical. And he went to live in his beach house. And he was taking a walk in the morning. He was feeling quite depressed. And that morning, sometimes it happens in beaches, a lot of starfish get washed onto the beach. So the entire beach is littered with starfish. And he sees a young man throwing something. He goes to the young man, what are you doing? He realizes he's throwing starfish back into the ocean. He says, young man, what's wrong with you? What are you doing? He says, I'm throwing these starfish back into the ocean. He says, but what? I mean, there are so many starfish here. What difference is that going to make? So the man doesn't answer. He picks up a starfish, throws it far back into the ocean. And he says, it made a difference to that one. And that man goes back home, and that night he can't sleep. He's thinking about this young man. He can't sleep that night. So next morning he wakes up, he goes out, and he joins the young man. He goes to throw starfish back into the ocean. So we can't always solve everything. But wherever we are, we can make a small difference. Right? So how are you telling the story of your life? If the story of your life is, I have to come in the front of the paper, I have to really make my mark somewhere, I have to be the best in the world for something, you're probably not doing, you don't even start, because everything, nothing is good enough. Your perfectionism will kill you. Because the moment you start, this is not good enough, this is not the highest quality enough, you'll not even make the small difference you can make. So the lovely phrase here is, please say with me, local universe.
Local universe.
Local universe is this universe, right? What you're seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. In this local universe, are you adding to life? Are you adding to the quality of your own life and the quality of other people's lives? Are you enhancing the vibration? Are you enhancing the consciousness? Or not? Are you losing an opportunity there? One of the reasons we're really troubled is because all this news comes in from so far away, different parts of India, different parts of the world, and we can't do anything about it. All you can do is write an angry Facebook comment. You can't really do too much about it, and you feel helpless. Right? But if you just were to focus on my local universe, and then chances are you can start creating heaven on earth wherever you go. Because if you start changing the way you see things, you start changing your experience of those things. There's a lovely phrase in India, please say with me. Yatha drishti,
tatha
srishti. So can you guess what it means? Yatha drishti means? As you'll see it. Drishti means how you'll see it. The way you see things. When I change my way of looking at things, tatha srishti means? That's my experience. My world changes. When I change my way of looking at the world, my world actually changes. My experience of the world changes. Right. Have you heard that famous serenity prayer? Any of you know the serenity prayer? Grant me the serenity.
To accept
the things I cannot change. The courage. Change the things I can. And the wisdom to know the difference. This is fantastic. It's a very, very deep prayer. So the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. For example, your height. You can't do too much about it. Now, you've been born like this. Now, how much will you do? At the most, you put on high heels. But beyond that, you can't do too much about your height. Your height is not pretty much set, all right? At least, I don't know any... Whatever you're born with, that's your height, right? Or the shape of your nose. And you can go for plastic surgery or whatever. Basically, your shape of your nose is more or less the shape of your nose. There are certain things you've got to just be serene about. Okay, that's just the way I am. Like it or not, that's the way I am, right? Change the things I can. There are certain things I can change. Right, certain habits, certain behaviors, certain things I can, if I put my effort, I can make the change in those directions. So the courage to change the things I can. And the most important is the wisdom to know the difference. What can I change? What can I not change? So in my journey, what I realized is that the present moment, it's already here. I can't change it. The way you are all sitting, the temperature of the air conditioner. Is it too cold, by the way? If it is, then we can change that. But we can change that in the next moment. In this moment, it's too late. It's the way it is. Right? The present moment is already here. Right? But what you can change is your way of looking at it. You can always change that. You can always upgrade that. There are infinite ways of looking at the same situation. Endless ways of looking at the same thing. Right? When you change your way of looking at it, you change your experience of it. So life is the way it is. You've got to accept life the way it is. But what you can change is the story of your life. And some people say you can't change the past, but I said, no, that's not true. Your past is a story. You can definitely change your past. In fact, every time you've healed because you have changed your past. You've changed your way of looking at the past. And instead of seeing that as a curse, you've seen that as an opportunity, a blessing, something that's made you who you are today. Right? Is it too cold, by the way? You want to make it less? Are you all right? Everyone all right? Less. Maybe make a little bit. Less means not colder. Just change it a bit, just in case people are uncomfortable. So there is life, and then there's the story of life. There is the present, and then there's the stories that I tell. And the quality of my life is two things. The quality of the stories I tell, and the quality of my presence. And this for me is a nice summary of everything that I've learned. Once we get these two things, everything else starts to fall in place. Now, how can you be a master storyteller? Is you put on powerful glasses. For example, the glasses of gratitude. I look at my eyes through the lens of gratitude. No matter how difficult your life has been, compared to someone, it's been a cakewalk. Isn't it true?
Yes.
No matter how difficult it's been. Lovely, lovely quote. One of my favorite quotes. Let's say this together. I never complain
about my life.
Because someone somewhere
dreams of a life.
Just like mine.
Like
praise for a life.
Just like mine.
So it's very powerful. Because if you think about it, it's so true. Right? Just the fact that you can sit here right now, listen to me. You're definitely, in so many ways, so fortunate. Right? If you think like that, you say, I'm actually very, very fortunate. And yatha drishti tatha srishti. Why just think you're fortunate? I like to think I'm the most fortunate person in existence. If you have to think, what stops you from thinking like that? I studied psychology, and one thing I found is, you can make anyone stand and talk about the difficulties of their life. And we'll all have wet eyes. Oh my goodness, this person has a very difficult life. And you can make anyone stand and talk about the blessings of their life. And again, we'll have tears. What an amazing life. Anyone can do that, and everyone has that capacity. We can all tell the story of our life like a horror story. And we can all tell the story of our life like an amazing journey, right? So which one do you habitually tell? What is your favorite way of telling your story? And are you being creative with the way you tell your story? Or are you telling it in a very uncreative way? If you tell it in a very uncreative way, then your life feels very stuck. If you tell it in a very creative way, your life becomes amazing, right? It's how you tell the story. So I never complain about my life. Someone somewhere dreams of a life just like mine. This is a very powerful statement. It liberates us. And it says, I am the way I am. Have you heard this phrase? In India, we use this phrase very often. It's called Sat Chit Ananda. Have you heard this phrase? Sat Chit Ananda. Sat Chit Ananda is called our ultimate reality. Our ultimate nature is Sat Chit Ananda. So let me quickly explain what it means. Sat means truth. Now, what is the truth? Everything in this world seems to be open for interpretation. What one person thinks is true, the other person thinks is not true. A great place to not look for the truth is a newspaper. One of my friends is a journalist. He said, if you don't read the paper, you're uninformed. But if you read the paper, you're misinformed. So what are you going to do, right? So what is the truth? Because every perspective, one of my friends, he's a professor in Pakistan. He's a political science professor in Pakistan. And he has a very simple solution to the problem of India and Pakistan. He said, I've got a very simple solution. In 1 year, you can solve it. I said, what's the solution? He says, 1 year, send all Pakistani papers to India. And send all Indian papers to Pakistan, and they'll realize what's going on. Just 1 year, and they'll all get it. They're being thoroughly brainwashed. Every side is being brainwashed, right? They're human beings just like us. But they are people who want to keep the conflict alive. Right? So, when you realize this, you start questioning. There's a lovely, you know what graffiti is? Somebody had done a big graffiti on a big wall in a subway station saying, question everything. And he came back 1 week later, and somebody done one extra graffiti below it. Why? Right? So what is the truth? It's open to so many interpretations. But the one thing that you cannot argue with is the fact that you exist. How will you argue with that? So no, I don't exist. Who said that? Somebody has to say I don't exist, right? You have to even exist to say I don't exist. You cannot argue with the basic truth that you exist. And not only do you exist, everything exists just the way it is. The floor, the trees, the clouds, existence. So the basic truth is existence. That there is existence. You don't need scientific evidence for that. You don't need, even non-human beings, even they exist. So the basic truth is existence. In India we call it Asmi, I am. I am. Just the way I am, right? So not I am this or I am that, that's open to interpretation. I am a good teacher, I'm a bad teacher, I'm a good brother, I'm a bad brother. These are open to interpretation. We can endlessly argue about those things. But I am is, you cannot argue with that. So the basic reality is I am. So if you're searching for ultimate truth, start with the basic truth, I am. Now what happens is, we have a sense that I am is different from, my I am is different from your I am. And this is where we get confused. The truth is, I am just is. So the basic I am is not different. Have you heard this lovely quote? God sleeps in the rock, dreams in the plant, stirs in the animal, and awakens in man. What a beautiful quote. That same principle is dormant, is dreaming, is stirring, and is awakening. What is awakening? Knowing that I am. So far there was just I am, existence. But to know that I exist, this is another dimension. This is called chit. Sat is to exist. Chit is to know that there is existence. And that existence is common in all of us. That's what leads to compassion. That's what leads to love. The realization. Think about it. You love people and beings who you have some commonality with. Commonality leads to love. So how can you love all beings when you realize there's something in common with all beings? Existence is common in all beings. So the realization that my sense of I am is actually no different from your sense of I am. Then on top of that, filters come. Stories come. Oh, but this happened, that happened, I like this, I don't like this. All those filters come. And that's what creates a sense of difference. So sat, existence. Chit, to be conscious of existence. To be conscious that there is existence. Ananda. Ananda is bliss for no reason. Happiness for no reason. Now this is a stable kind of happiness. Because every other happiness was for a reason, right? But because everything changes, that's not reliable. No matter what it is. Today you came first. There's an underlying anxiety, but tomorrow will I still come first? I'm not sure anymore. Today they like me, but tomorrow if they really get to know me, will they still like me? You see, there will always be that uncertainty. And if you look at our life, it's just this much. In the past, you had certain pleasant and unpleasant experiences. Now, what is the turmoil? We want to make sure the future, those pleasant experiences keep on continuing with as much security as possible, and those unpleasant experiences don't happen again. That's basically what our life is about. Isn't it? What is your future but a projection of the past? To the extent you've not understood the past was just Sat, Chit, Ananda, existence, consciousness, and the bliss of course comes when you realize that. Right? To the extent you don't realize that, you will always have a story. And your story is your prison. So the most powerful teaching is, please say with me, who am I?
Who am I?
Without all my stories.
Without all my stories.
So just try this for the next few minutes. Close your eyes. Say it again with me. Who am I?
Who am I?
Without all my stories.
Without all my stories.
In other words, your past is not available to you. Your future is not available to you. Even what's happening now, no description is available to you. And when you ask this question, for some people it'll feel light. For some people, it'll actually feel tight. It'll feel uncomfortable. And for a moment, even take away those words and just experience it. Who am I without all stories? And whatever stories come up, who am I without this story? Existence, just know that there is existence. Something is existing. Being conscious of something that's existing. one last time, who am I without all my stories? What is it like to drop everything you know? What is it like to make the known into the unknown? Take a nice deep breath. And if you want, you can rub your palm nice and long. Over the eyes. And let's say together, how wonderful. So the definition of meditation is to meet yourself without your stories. The whole day we're meeting ourselves with our stories. I'm good at this, I'm bad at this. But for a little while in the day, can you meet yourself without your stories? Just existence, just the way it is. And of course, stories will come, but you'll notice the stories. You see, normally we don't notice our own stories. The big deal is you start noticing, oh, this story came, this thought came. Normally we don't notice our thoughts. So it's called metacognition, the ability to be aware of our own thinking. As that starts to happen, you start awakening into a whole new dimension. It's like we've been a chicken and an egg the whole life. We never realized that there's a dimension above. We've been in the womb the whole life. We never knew that the whole world outside of this. There is a world outside of your stories. There is a world outside of your thinking, which you never perhaps even imagined. No one ever even told you perhaps there's such a world. And that dimension starts becoming available to you. And that dimension, it is not limited by space and time. Right, so amazing things can happen in that dimension. Things that are totally beyond your concept of what's possible. For example, you can pray for someone far away and they get the benefit. You can pray for someone in the past and they get the benefit. You can pray for someone who's died and they get the benefit. You can stop praying altogether and you trust everything is well, and everything is well. Right? So it's like a different physics, a different chemistry, a different biology come into play. When you step out of this little bubble of thought that's always there. So the definition of meditation is to meet yourself without your stories. The definition of love is, please say with me, meeting the other
without my stories.
Because when you have a story, you're not loving them, you're judging them, isn't it? Every single moment. Even that so-called love is not a love, it's an attachment, it's a contract. You keep giving me what I want and I'm going to love you. But genuine love is to meet without the story. Then there's not even an other anymore. Even the idea of the other goes away. I wrote some years back that, have you heard the word samsara? Samsara is called the whole sphere. We keep rotating in the samsara from birth to birth. This is a famous word in India. So the definition of samsara is finding fault with others. Whenever you find fault with others, you're in samsara. Could be anybody. And nirvana is? There are no others. When you realize there are no others, then that is nirvana. It is like one tree and the roots going underground and other trees coming up. Oh, that's another tree. That's not another tree. It's the same tree. Because when you're asleep at night, the whole world disappears. There's some connection, right? When you wake up in the morning, the whole world appears. There's some connection between you and the whole world. Without this, there's not that. So there is a connection. Is it really separate? So deep down, you start realizing that you are another me. You know, I've done a lot of retreats and I'll get people very often, you know, people who don't know each other. You know, some of Manisha and some of you been here at my retreats, Nagina. And I'll take people who have never met each other, put them together and just talk to each other for half an hour. I'll give them some principles of, you know, confidentiality and don't interrupt and things like that. Just talk for half an hour, come back. And so many people come back, they're holding hands, they're big friends. What happened? it's amazing, Nitya. We are just, we have the same life story. It's amazing, you know. We've had the same, it's like amazing. We were able to share our hearts. And they come back like they're big friends. Half an hour they talk, just half an hour. And they come back like, you know, this person knows me, I know this person. We understand each other. How could it be? The total strangers, putting them together, and there has to be a deep connection. Because we are connected. Behind all the judgments, we are connected. We are one. So meditation is meeting yourself without your stories. Of course, you'll notice your stories. Right? But every time you meditate, every time you step beyond the story, you say with me, every time,
every time
I come into presence,
I am left
with less of a story.
Less.
In other words, the more you live in this awareness, your stories become lighter. They may not fully disappear, but they get lighter and lighter and lighter, which means your life gets freer and freer and freer. Because what traps us actually is not life doesn't trap us, it's your thinking that traps you. Your thinking can change you and your thinking can chain you. What is it doing? Certain thoughts will change you and certain thoughts will chain you. You have to decide which thoughts are chaining you, which thoughts are changing you. So meditation is meeting yourself without your stories. Love is to meet the other, so-called other, without your story. And then so-called nirvana, enlightenment, is meeting all of life without your stories. When you meet all of life without stories, then that's true oneness. That's true freedom. That's Sat, Chit, Ananda. My existence is not different from your existence. The basic sense of existence remains. For example, this is one of my favorite teachers, Nisargadatta Maharaj. He gives a lovely quote in one of his books, I Am That. He says, in the beginning, you're in this forest full of tigers. And there's a cage around you. There's tigers prowling all around. So okay, it's scary, but you're all right. You're in this cage, right? You're in a tiger. You're in a jungle full of tigers, and there's a cage around you. Step one. Step two. You're in the jungle. All the tigers are in the cage. So now you can walk around. The tigers are all in the cage. They're locked up somewhere. Step three. You ride the tiger. Lovely image, right? We have in India. We have Durga's image. Some of the goddesses, they're actually riding the tiger. It shows something, it means something. What does it mean? Let's say jungle represents your life. Tigers represent all your fears. All the things you're afraid of, all the things, the uncertainties, the dreads, all those things, you know, the pains. So in the beginning, you lock yourself up. Oh, nothing should happen, right? You cage yourself. Don't want to go there, don't want to try that. Right. Step one. Step two, you suppress everything. So outwardly, you're very happy-go-lucky, but the tigers are there waiting to jump out. Never know when they'll get unlocked, right? So a little bit freer. But still, you haven't dealt with them. Step three, you ride the tiger. So all the things you're afraid of, you actually ride them. The fear is gone. How do you ride them? You see all of them, they're all your friends. They're all emanations of your own mind. You welcome them. Come on home, welcome. So here's the powerful teaching. Nothing can trouble me.
Nothing can trouble me.
But my own imagination. So imagine that there is a very powerful, you know, they put on these 3D glasses. And you know it's 3D glasses. But they say now, the room looks the same, but once in a while you see a ghost. Once in a while you see something scary will jump out. But it's not going to really jump out because you're wearing these 3D glasses. So it looks like a normal room, but suddenly something will jump out. Now the question is, are you going to get fooled by it? Or do you know these are just 3D glasses? Yeah, come on. There's no ghost over there. It looks real, but it's not real. To the extent you can see that, you know that, you're not going to be afraid. So that will only come to the extent you realize that ultimately what's tricking you is your own mind. Nobody else is tricking you. Nobody else is hurting you. Your own mind is troubling you. My favorite definition of mind, let's say together, mostly inaccurate neurodrama. Isn't that good? Yeah. You're getting fooled by your own mind. So where are we going to? We're going to a place of never mind. Let the mind do its thing, and we are at peace. Sat, Chit, Ananda. We are in truth. Truth is existence. There is existence. I am. Chit is to be conscious. To be conscious that I exist, and there is existence. And now automatically what comes is a different kind of happiness, not the normal happiness we're used to, which is based on emotions and based on people giving us what we want and things going the way we like. That'll come and that'll go. That's fine. It comes good. But it's not always going to be there. But now you found something even more amazing than that. It's a kind of transparent happiness. It's the happiness of being. And now, so far we only knew the dimension of change. But there is no change without non-change, you see. Change depends on non-change. If you see me moving my hand, it's because something in the background is perhaps not moving so much, right? Which is why you can see my hand moving. Always change requires non-change. You can see the cloud is moving. How come you can see it's moving? This is the background of non-movement. So the realization comes that I am the sky, everything else is weather. I am the sky, everything else is weather. I am the mirror, everything else is the reflection. And now the balancing has come. Earlier we thought I am a poor being, you know, stuck in this world of change. No, I am. I just am. I'm existence, consciousness, and bliss. And this is untainted by the comings and goings of life. Even to have a small taste of this, you start finding your old hang-ups start going away. Your old, all the, you know, we all have funny aspects of our personality. These dysfunctional aspects of our personality just start slowly evaporating, slowly going away. And a kind of inner health starts to come. Health of mind, health of body, health of relationships starts to come. It doesn't happen immediately. It's a process. But at least now you know that there's a way. There's a way out of the mess. All right. So I'm going to do a few short readings and then we'll have a discussion after that. But before that, just take a few minutes of silence. Just be quiet. Sat, Chit, Ananda, existence, consciousness of existence, and bliss, happiness of being. So I'll take a deep breath. And before we go further, let's just stand up for a minute, stretch your legs. So this is called OTMs. OTMs are called, say with me, opportunities to move. And what I've learned is recently I found out that sitting is worse than smoking. And you know what's worse than that? Sitting and smoking. So every hour you should make some movement, right? So when you're sitting for a while, get up and move, that's very good for you. All right, I'm going to read from some of my favorite books. This is a book called Wisdom from an Empty Mind by Jacob Lieberman. It's not available anymore, so it's special. Give me a random page number, somebody.
Page
28. Page 28? Imagine that life is simply about taking care of ourselves. Feeding ourselves, bathing ourselves, tending to whatever comes before us, and in that way, just being. For most of us, the being side of life is underused, and the doing side is weighed down. When we are being, we are humane, and we are very much in touch with everything in life. When we are doing, we forget the essence of our humanity and narrowly focus our minds on making things happen. We forget that everything in life is already happening. Our lives today are complex because we have lost sight of what is essential. We've developed technologies to handle the complexities that we have created, but we still don't have time for living. Living successfully isn't about making a lot of money. It is about embracing life and responding to it honestly in each moment. This alone is the true source of our prosperity, because in this practice, we evolve from human doings to human beings. And let's say together, take care, of what's in front of you, and the universe, will take care of you. So he's saying that imagine that life is simply about taking care of ourselves, feeding ourselves, bathing ourselves, tending to whatever comes up in front of us. And in this way, just being. For many of us, the being side of life is underused and the doing side is weighed down. Right? When we focus on doing, we narrowly focus our mind on making things happen. We forget that everything is already happening. Right? And a quick example of this, I did a program for a company. And a gentleman said that we had an important shipment to be sent. And we packaged everything and we put it into the truck. And the truck driver couldn't be found. The shipment has to go. Where is the truck driver? Can't be found. And we're calling his phone. He's not picking up his phone. So when the man finally comes, he shouts at him, "Where have you been? Such an important shipment. You're nowhere to be found. You're not answering your phone." And this man is a slightly elderly gentleman. He's a Punjabi gentleman, Sardarji. He says, "Sir, I drive this truck for 14 hours a day. In these 14 hours, I take only one half an hour lunch break. In that time, I switch my phone off and I just enjoy my half an hour lunch break. If even in that half an hour, you want me to hurry and to rush, tell me why am I driving this truck for 14 hours? If I cannot even have a half an hour lunch break in peace and eat my food without interruptions, why do I bother driving this truck?" And the man said he felt very embarrassed. So I was so caught up in trying to get the shipment and all of that, I forgot about the humanity. This man is spending 12 hours a day in this truck. He also needs a break. He also needs to refresh himself. So when we focus on doing, then everything becomes a pawn in our master plan. This person will give me this, that person will give me this. And if they don't give, we get very upset. Because they're just pawns in our master plan of getting somewhere. But when you're in a state of being, then you become more humane. Who asked for this number? Somebody asked, who gave me this number? Did you give me the number? So comment on the story, on this little thing we just read. What came up for you?
You suddenly ask a question.
How wonderful. That's
the
normal. That's the idea. As I read this, what were you feeling?
I was feeling, this feels very familiar and I do this and it's beautiful just to be and just to take care of what's in front of me.
Yeah. So when in your life are you in that state of just being and taking care of what's in front of you?
When in my life?
I'm just taking it as it comes, without getting too much into the next thing. Does it happen sometimes?
Yeah. Except, when I'm not doing something, I'm getting doing. Mm-hmm. I usually am something like that. Just sort of relax and get into it. Or that whatever kind of overall plan I have in life, that get up, go for a walk, do my reading, some inspirational reading.
If you're doing that.
Yeah.
Then you're more in touch with that being state of life.
Yes. Wash my hair, have a bath, what am I going to wear? What am I going to eat? Then I'm just thinking about that. Enjoying that.
Right. That's also how wonderful. Anybody else wants to comment on what you just read? What came up for you as I shared this?
I pray every day after bath, and gratitude for the body, soul, mind and spirit, that because of this structure of material, frame, I could see, I could hear, I could eat, I could enjoy, I could do a work. So I really pray by heart every day. I stand in front of mirror and pray that, thank you universe for providing me this form. Because of that, I could really enjoy and exploring what I am in this form.
That's beautiful. We're lucky to have a mirror here. Why don't you just make us say the prayer? We'll all look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. And we'll all say the prayer that you've said. We'll repeat it after you. Let's all look in the mirror. Tell us the prayer.
I thank myself for being here.
myself for being here.
I thank the whole universe.
I thank the whole universe
for being here.
For being here.
I thank all the positive energy of the universe.
I thank all the positive energy of the universe
for being here and blessing me.
For being here and blessing me.
I thank all the angels and goddesses.
I thank all the angels and goddesses.
I thank all the religions.
I thank all the religions.
I thank all the manifestations.
I thank all the manifestations.
And their great teachers and masters.
And their great teachers and masters.
And their great teachings and blessings.
And their great teachings and blessings.
I thank my four grandfather and four grandmother.
I thank my four grandfathers and four grandmothers.
And my grandfather and my grandmother.
And my grandfather
and my grandmother.
And my father and my mother.
And my father and my mother.
And my whole ancestors.
And my whole ancestors.
And my all friends.
And my all friends.
Relatives.
Relatives.
Colleagues.
Colleagues.
Who have passed away.
Who have passed away.
Who are still alive.
Who are still alive.
Who will be my friends for relatives and colleagues.
Who will be my friend, relatives and colleagues.
I thank to the whole universe, nature, world and divine.
I thank the whole universe, nature, world and divine.
For being here.
For being here.
And blessing me.
And blessing me.
And providing me this wonderful form of body, soul, mind and spirit.
Body, soul, mind and spirit.
I am always and forever gratitude.
Always and forever gratitude.
For everything.
For everything.
What I have received till now.
What I have received till now.
And what I will receive in the future.
And what I will receive in the future.
Thank you so much to the universe.
Thank you so much to the universe.
For everything.
For everything.
I am blessed.
I am blessed.
I am loved.
I am loved.
I am loved.
I am
loved.
How wonderful. Without giving my hand a fun. That's an amazing prayer. It's a comprehensive prayer, right? You covered pretty much everything there. Did you make that up yourself? Did you come up with that yourself?
Yeah, it's everyday practice.
Everyday practice.
Yeah, yeah, it automatically comes.
Good stuff. You guys are here. How come you're here from Bombay?
Just to see you.
Just to see you. Oh, that's not true. That's not true. Great to have you guys. All right. So, the basic idea of this teaching is that we don't have to make it so complicated. In fact, what I found is, in fact, you may also find this, the days you're more present, everything happens more smoothly. The days you're overthinking, what has to be done, what has to be done, what has to be done, everything gets very, very heavy. And I recently came across on Facebook, the person I follow on Facebook called Jesse Elder. He gave a very nice practice. When we're too much in the doing mind, how do you calm yourself before sleeping at night? So he said, before sleeping at night, take out a notepad, take out your journal, and write down 3 to 5 things that happened good in the day. Otherwise, you always feel nothing was good enough, that didn't get done, that didn't get done, that get. But a lot of things also got done, actually. A lot of things you did from morning to evening. There were some positive things in the day. So you force yourself to write down between 3 to 5 things, positive, beneficial, that happened that day. And then he says, ask yourself, how do I want to wake up in the morning? What state of being do I want to wake up in the morning? I want to wake up with what? I want to wake up feeling energized. I want to wake up feeling enthusiastic. I want to wake up feeling focused. I want to wake up feeling connected. I want to wake up feeling positive. You name the word, you know, whatever it is. And you say that to yourself and you go ahead and you tune into that. This is what it feels like to wake up feeling like that. And he says this is a great way to unwind from your day. No matter how busy your day has been, you end it by writing down 3 to 5 things that actually happened positive in the day. And you ask yourself, I will wake up feeling, and chances are you do wake up feeling like that. Because the whole night, your unconscious mind had a chance to chew on that, churn that, absorb that, assimilate that. And this starts becoming a wonderful way to live. And one more thing I noticed with this practice is that, you know, often you look back on the year, it's a kind of a blur. What happened in the year? What was I doing? But if you look back at the list, now suddenly you have a list of what you've been up to, because something positive that happened in the day for the last so many months and you know, the whole year. It's a really good record of what you're like. You start thinking, I'm so blessed. Actually, all the things that he said in the prayer, it is so true. Yes, I've got challenges, but it's not here to break me. It's here to make me. Right. That's the first reading. Second reading, we're going to read from this little book I found. It's called Sai Darshan. And this, again, I don't know if it's easily available, but it's a small publication. And this lady, she would pray, and as she would pray, she would get guidance. And she attributed the guidance to Sai Baba. And then she would write down the guidance she got. So I think she's written one for every day of the year, I think. I'm pretty sure. For every day of the year. Every day of the year. 300 and... It's just less than a year. 350. Anybody give me a page number? 16. Let's say this together. Look at me closely.
Look beyond the body.
Look inside.
Look
deep.
And you will see.
I am nothing.
But your reflection.
Right? So look at me closely. Look beyond the body. Look deep. Look inside. And you will see I am nothing. But your own reflection. If you look beyond the superficial aspects, we're actually only meeting ourselves. So what did you get from this little passage?
I'm so much able to connect to it.
Really? Say more.
Yeah.
Say more.
People actually, when you see others, people actually judge when you see them that, oh, she's beautiful, oh, she's not. Oh, she's white, oh, she's black. Oh, she's so and so. We should actually, you know, see beyond that.
Yeah.
We should actually see beyond that. We all know that we should see, but how we are supposed to practice that? That's more important.
That's good. And I guess we'll only be able to do that if we look do it with ourselves.
Yeah, maybe.
Unless we look beyond, like if you only look at the superficial aspect of ourselves. You look in the at your face and say, oh, bad hair day, and you know, I'm not exercising enough, and you know, we're only focusing on that aspect, and we're not looking at all the other good qualities we have. Then chances are we'll also judge other people very superficially, based on, you know, just assumptions, just on the way they look, the way they dress, the kind of economic status they have, whether we're going to get, very often it's, am I going to get something out of this person or not? Am I going to get something out? If you don't, so there's a lovely teaching that your character is judged, or can be determined rather, based on how you treat people who have nothing to offer you. They have nothing to give you, nothing to offer you. Now, how do you treat that person? Because of course, we're going to be very nice with people who are going to give us a lot, right? Even if it's an Ivanka Trump, who actually nobody perhaps that much would really care that much about before. But just because she happens to be the daughter of the president, it's such a huge... I mean, it was amazing to see when she came here. How much of, you know, everybody went out of their way. I was in Hyderabad. And how much people went out of their way. All right, just because you feel you're going to get something out of associating with her. By herself, she's just a human being. She's living her life, right? And we put all of this around that. So it's about what we can get out of it. It's not... what's happening, it's about what we can get out of that very often. So to look past the superficial aspect and to see the deeper aspect, just ourselves. So please say with me,
you are
another me.
Another me.
I am another you.
Another you.
Right. So when they're criticizing you a lot, then you know that there's something inside themselves they're not accepted. That's why they're criticizing you. It's very interesting that people who really criticize others very strongly, like they go really after the corrupt people. Very often these people are themselves corrupt. It's actually not uncommon, right? They go after people who are, they've got some quality they don't like. You know, they really go after them. And then they have it, that's a skeleton in their own closet. Because we judge in others what we haven't accepted in ourselves. And actually we are all corrupt. In a very fundamental way, we're all corrupt. One of my teachers said this. He said, when you take this body to be yourself, it's corruption. So he said, what do you mean it's corruption? He said, your body is made of earth, water, fire, air, and space. When you take this body to be yourself, it is misappropriation of public property. At that level, we're all corrupt then, you know, who can say I'm not corrupt then, right? If we're all corrupt, we're all misappropriating public property. The air is public, the water is public, the sunlight is public. He said, no, this is mine. And then these things around me are mine. Don't touch it. All right. Let's do one more reading. This is a book from Robert Adams, one of my favorite teachers. And this book is called Silence of the Heart. Someone give me a random page.
73.
Okay. I'm just going to start from the middle of the chapter. Remember the finite mind cannot comprehend the infinite. This is why it is important to always see where you are coming from. What were you involved in today, as an example? In retrospect, go back to this morning. What was the first thing you did when you opened your eyes? You should be aware of the I thought. He says when you wake up in the morning, suddenly the I thought appears. I, right? And he says it rushes from your heart to your brain. And that's where all the to-dos come. I've got to do this today. I've got to do that today. I've got to meet this person today. Today is Monday. Today is Tuesday. That's your attention rushing from your heart to your head. And he's saying, now you awake and you feel your body and you feel the world. Don't go any further. You should now attempt to work on yourself. Send the I thought back to the spiritual center, back to your heart. He said, when you wake up in the morning, don't let the energy rush to your brain. Bring it back to your heart for a moment. You should immediately attempt to do this. In other words, you should not continue the game of the I thought telling you the things about your body, things about the world. You should not put on the TV, watch the world news, because that will pull you further into the illusion. But you should immediately begin to inquire, what happened to the I? Where is the I? Apparently, it must be in my head, for I am aware of my body and the world. I am identifying with it. This is the way you should talk to yourself and ask yourself the question, but how did that I thought get to the brain? And you stop. You begin to think about this. You are abiding in the I. And if you're really abiding in the I thought travels backwards. It leaves the head and comes back to the heart. Catch yourself. This is the first thing you should do when you wake up. So very nice. Today we've learned how to end the day and how to start the day. You end the day by reflecting on the day and asking yourself, how do I want to wake up in the morning? And you wake up in the morning, don't immediately get into the to-dos. You come back into the being. Of course, your mind, it will rush, especially when you're moving. You're moving houses and all of that. So many things to do, right? But come back into the heart, at least for a little while. Come back into the heart. I call this, say with me, meditation. Right? It's not meditation, it is. But when you're still in bed, you can do it. This is called meditation. I know that most of you forget. Yet, you should have some clue that tells you, it's time for me to abide in the I. I'm not going to allow the I to bring all these thoughts. Forget about your work for a moment. Forget about getting dressed for a moment. Forget about it. Bring the I thought back to your heart. And you will see that your mind is nothing but a collection of thoughts. If there is no thought, there is no mind. Can't you see what you're doing? As you begin to think, the I thought returns to its source. In other words, you don't have to really send the I thought back to the self. You simply have to ask what the I thought really is. And you'll come to the conclusion that it's just a thought. If the I thought did not exist, then your body would not exist, the world would not exist. And just thinking in this way, you'll begin to feel peaceful, you'll begin to feel happy. I know you're saying, well, I don't have time to do this, you see, I'm getting late for work. I've got to get dressed, I've got to eat breakfast. But again, I say to you, this is not yoga. This is not meditation. You have to take out time for meditation. This is a superior method. This is called self-inquiry. And you will notice when it's time to get dressed, eat your breakfast and go to work, your body will do it in record time. You will not even think about doing these things. And yet your body will shower. Your body will do what it has to do. You will be out of the house. You will also feel great. This is the difference between self-inquiry and meditation. You're not meditating on anything. You're simply inquiring into the I thought. And each step will come by itself. You will not have to think about what I'm going to say next. For example, as you're working on yourself this way, thoughts will come to you. Something within you will immediately say, to whom does this thought come? You're not planning this. You're not rehearsing this. And by the way, never rehearse. Never plan what you're going to do in the morning. Unless it's spontaneous, it will not work. Remember this, self-inquiry should be spontaneous. It should not be a drudgery. It should not be something you've planned. Who asked for this page? Did you ask for this page? So say something about this, what we just read. What came up for you as you read this?
It was too complex to come.
How wonderful. That's fine. That's fine. Did you get at least one little thing out of it? Even one little thing?
Too much on myself.
Oh, wow, how nice. Don't take it so seriously. That's a good one. Yeah.
Don't get into planning.
Exactly. Don't get so much into planning. Just come in. Again, it's similar to what we read in the beginning. Don't get into doing, come into being. Right. It's basically just that. And the method he's giving us is then you wake up in the morning, the energy, notice for a little while back, the day did not exist. There was no world, there was no day, there was no home, there was no office, there was nothing. Then suddenly it came rushing in. Suddenly you became a body. Suddenly it became a Monday. Suddenly it became a deadline. Suddenly it became an email to be replied to, and your mind just filled up all of a sudden. So all he's saying is for a moment, just trace it backwards. Because if you keep going forward, you're back into the illusion, you're back into the dream. Just come back and bring the attention, literally shift your attention from the head to the heart. And ask yourself, to who does this come? Who is it all of this comes to? Like, for example, we ask the question, who am I without my stories? It's the same thing. Without your stories, you just are. It's being. It's Sat, Chit, Ananda. Existing, conscious of existing, and a natural kind of happiness. What we experience in deep sleep, right? And that can become available to us. There's a lovely quote, please say together. Sleep is unconscious meditation. And meditation?
And meditation,
can you fill in the blanks?
Conscious.
Is conscious sleep. Very good. Right. So in this meditation process, we are actually making our sleep state conscious. Normally we are unconscious in the sleep state, and then we're conscious for the rest of the time. You say, no, go backwards and start making what is unconscious conscious. Alright. Anybody else wants to comment on what we just read? And I like when he said that it'll happen in record time, right? Because when you're thinking too much, everything goes slow actually. But when you're just being, everything just happens. It gets done. So it's the opposite of what you expect. They say on a busy day, you know, they say on a normal day, meditate an hour. On a busy day, meditate 2 hours.
Right? In martial arts, this concept of too many minds, no mind.
Okay, yes.
And fundamentally, if it's no mind, that's when you really are able to
explore. Wow. Right, beautiful.
So
exactly right. And like in Zen or in many of these traditions, they talk about being in the zone.
Yeah, exactly.
Being in the zone. Like in Zen, they'll say no mind. So like, you don't even know how you're doing it, it's just happening. Because you get yourself out of the way. In fact, you'll be at your best when you get yourself out of the way. Because normally you're tripping up because of yourself. Your personality is tripping you up. You get yourself out of the way and now you're in the zone. That's the happiest moments of your life. Either when you're serving others, you get yourself out of the way. Or you're in a state of devotion, you get yourself out of the way. Or you're meditating, you get yourself out of the way. These are the happiest moments of our life. It's called yoga. Yoga means union. Union with what? With your true self. So different paths of union. One is meditation. One is bhakti. One is serving others. Right? One is inquiring into who am I, gyan yoga. Different paths. But all come to the same thing. You get out of your own way. You get out of your own way. You leave your stories to a side. Who are you without your stories? We began by saying, there's a story of my life, and then there's life. And if you're too caught up in the story of your life, no matter how good it is, you're still caught up. It's your thoughts. Right? So the more we just come back to the simple experience of being, living, life living itself, then your stories get more and more refined, your stories get more and more transparent. And when you see others also, their stories become transparent. You don't buy everything that they're saying. You don't get triggered by everything that they're saying. One last reading. This is a lovely book. This is called Kitchen Table Wisdom. It's a book written by a doctor. And she shares her experiences of treating many patients. And she was very hesitant to write this book. Because she said, you know, doctors, you're supposed to, every time you write something, you should have a reference. Like when you write scientific papers. So she was very hesitant to write the book. But her friends encouraged her. It's a beautiful book of short stories of her experiences dealing with all kinds of patients. Can someone give me a random page number and we'll open that story, we'll read that story.
111.
111, alright. Wow, 111, it starts right here. All right. The story is called The Long Way Home. Often times of crisis are times of discovery. Periods when we cannot maintain our old ways of doing things and we enter into a steep learning curve. Sometimes it takes crisis to initiate growth. I had a patient, a woman, who was in her 8th year of recovery from cervical cancer. She had come weekly while she was undergoing cancer treatment, but now we only saw each other for touch-ups when things became stressful for her. Helen was a truly gorgeous woman who spent hours on her appearance. Even during the worst of chemotherapy and illness, her nails had to be perfect, her wigs had to be perfect. No one had seen her face without makeup since she was a child. She had been single for many years. When she was married, she always awoke 30 minutes before her husband to do a full makeup and be dressed before he opened his eyes. There's something called the Holmes-Rahe Stress Index, which rates a promotion equal in stress to a job loss. Very interesting. A promotion is equal in stress to a job loss. And marriage is equal in stress to a divorce. Perhaps it is change itself which stresses us, whether it is loss or gain. You talked about this, right? Perhaps it is stress itself which stresses us. Helen came to see me for one of her touch-ups because she had become engaged. She described her fiancé as a wonderful person, kind, loyal, intelligent, humorous. He was very successful and creative businessman. They had been living together for some time and got on very well. She described him as perfect, with one exception. He lacked passion. Their romantic life was pleasant but boring. He asked her permission every time he kissed her. She was not sure that this was what she wanted in a man. All this changed abruptly on October 17, 1989, at 5:04 p.m. On that afternoon, Helen was in one of downtown San Francisco's finest department stores seeking the perfect outfit for a business dinner honoring her fiancé. In the company of a personal shopper, she was in a dressing room wearing a fuchsia silk dress that she had decided was just right. Both women were admiring the dress, and the shopper suggested she wear it up to the 7th floor and match it to a pair of shoes. Leaving all her belongings in the locked dressing room, she went to the shoe department. She had just put on a pair of heels with the perfect shade when the earthquake struck. All the lights went out. The building shook violently. She was thrown on the floor. In the darkness, she could hear things falling all around her. When the shaking stopped, she and a few saleswomen and several other customers somehow made their way down the stairs in the darkness to the front door. There was broken glass everywhere. Helen found herself standing in the street in a very expensive dress and perfectly matching 4-inch heels. Frightened and dazed people were rushing all around her. All her own clothes and her purse was somewhere in the dark chaos of a building, which quite possibly was no longer safe to re-enter. Her money was in her purse, so were her car keys. Walking to the corner, she picked up a public phone. It was dead. Helen was a person who had never been able to ask for help, and she couldn't ask for help now. She turned north and started walking towards her home, many miles away in San Rafael. It took her 8 hours to reach there. After a short time, her feet began to hurt. She took off the heels and threw them away. As she walked on her nylon store, her feet began to bleed. She passed buildings that had collapsed, stumbled over rubble, waded through streets filled with filthy water from the firefighting efforts. Dirty, sweaty, disheveled, she walked down the marina to the Golden Gate Bridge and walked across it to the next county. She reached home sometime after midnight, knocked on her own front door. It was opened by her fiancé, who had never before seen her with her hair uncombed. Without a word, he took her into his arms, kicked the door close, covered her dirty, tear-stained face with kisses, and they made love right there on the floor. Helen is a very intelligent person, but could not understand why she had never met this ardent lover before. When she asked him, he simply said, "I was always afraid of smearing your lipstick." She tells me that now, when she begins to relapse into her former perfectionism, She remembers the look of love in her fiancé's eyes when he opened the door that day. She had been looking for men all her life, but she had never seen that expression in a man's eye before. At the heart of any real intimacy is a certain vulnerability. It is hard to trust someone with your own vulnerability unless you can see in them a matching vulnerability and know that you will not be judged. I'm going to read this again. At the heart of any real intimacy is a certain vulnerability. It is hard to trust someone with your own vulnerability unless you can see in them a matching vulnerability and know that you will not be judged. In some basic way, it is our imperfections and even our pain that draws others close to us. So this is the story of Helen, who was always perfectly dressed. And she met the love of her life on the one day when she was terribly dressed. Tell us, what did you get from the story? Anything?
It really reflects my thoughts right now in terms of I'm trying to resist a change because of the same thing what was written there was you shouldn't judge someone else or something like that. But here it's about judging yourself.
Mm.
It's like constantly putting yourself up to a pedestal where you don't want to, you know, go down.
Yeah.
So it's really important that we accept ourselves the way we are. And I think I needed the message.
Beautiful. Let's all say how wonderful.
How wonderful.
Anybody else wants to share a reflection on the story? Helen? You want to share? Manisha?
So yes, it's a very beautiful story. And what it tells me is it's okay to be vulnerable because that's what really is pain and vulnerability that helps us connect with others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about not judging ourselves, not judging others. And that's where the beauty of life lies.
So beautiful. How wonderful. I also want to reread that first few lines of this. It's so beautiful what she said in the beginning. That oftentimes crises are times of discovery. Periods when we cannot maintain our old ways of doing things and we enter into a steep learning curve. Sometimes it takes crisis to initiate growth. This is again changing our relationship with change, isn't it? Beautiful. So now I'd like us to get into small groups of either three or four people. Just wherever you are, just turn around. Get into small groups. Get everyone's name. Just have a small discussion. We've covered many things today. We also had a few small practices. Just what are the feelings in you now? What are you thinking? What do you remember? What stayed with you? What thoughts are they triggering? And let's have a 10-minute discussion in small groups. Just turn around. Everyone, get into small groups of either three or four people. Three or four people. Find some people around you. Get the names of the people around you again. Have a small discussion. All right, please thank your group members. Thank you all.
Thank you.
All right, so we had a chance to just share together and reflect on some of the things that we went through today. And today's practice began with a recollection of the time of birth. From birth till now, we played just all the memory that we could think of and all the changes that have happened in our life. And how at one time what seemed so big and so real, now is just a faint glimmer of a memory. And same with this moment today. Right now it's so real, but even just a little while later, this will just be a faint memory. Right? And so then we don't take our life so heavily, so seriously. We realize that everything is in context. Right? At one point, what seems so huge, what's like not doing your homework, the end of the world is coming, you know. But now you look back and smile, all right, you don't do your homework, life goes on. So today, whatever you think is the end of the world, is actually not the end of the world. And the powerful question we asked is, what is my relationship with change? And everybody shared different things around what is my relationship with change. And there's no right or wrong answer. Just become aware, what is my relationship with change? Is it scary? Is it exciting? Is it innocent? Is it inevitable? What is my relationship with change? And can I have a healthier relationship with change? Is there another way of looking at it than the way I'm looking at it right now? And then there is the story of our life, and then there is life. If you have to tell a story, why not tell a good story? Why tell a horror story? You know, you can tell a horror story about your life, and we all have a horror story. We all have had, everyone I'm sure here has a dysfunctional family, right? We all have dysfunctional family. But in the middle of dysfunctional is the word fun. If it wasn't dysfunctional, it wouldn't be fun. There's a lovely quote I read that every family has a weird one. If you don't know who it is, it's you. Right. So we all have dysfunctional families, but we also have functional families, and there's beauty, and all of that is part of the whole game, right? So to learn to keep a balanced mind. Now, one nice practice that we talked about is ending the day by focusing on the good thing that happened on the day. Writing down, if you like, 3 to 5 good things that happened on the day, and asking yourself, what do I want to experience tomorrow morning? And then when you wake up in the morning, not rushing to doing, coming back to being, shifting from the head to the heart, to a state of being. And when you do this, you learn the art of dissolving. The art of dissolving everything. Who am I without my stories? When you meet yourself without your story, that's meditation. When you meet others without your story, that's love. When you meet life without your stories, then that just is. It's enlightenment. It's awakening. And you can have many, many, many moments of awakening. I'm running a 3-year course right now. It's an online course. Some of the people here are part of it. And the main exercise for them is just these 3 things. It's meditation. You can wake up in the morning, shift from the head to the heart. And take short moments in the day, 10 seconds of being present. Right now, try 10 seconds. That's about 10 seconds. Do it again, 10 seconds. Just be present. And the shift is from having a life to being alive. From making a living to having a life, to being alive, right? It's not just about getting somewhere, it's not about human doing, it's about human being. So you can take 10 seconds, so my recommendation is at least 12 times a day, once an hour. Take 10 seconds. Disconnect from all the doing and just come into being. And of course you'll forget many times if you come back again. You start realizing you have to develop that muscle of being. We've overdeveloped the muscle of doing and we've underdeveloped the muscle of being. And no matter how much you accomplish, if you don't learn to just be, at the end of the day it doesn't satisfy you. Because the most magical moments of life are being. Right. And also 10 seconds of love. 10 seconds of good wishes. So we're going to end our evening with this. 10 seconds of love. Close your eyes. I'll give a few examples. So 10 seconds of love to everyone who is gathered here today. Ten seconds of love to everyone in our family. 10 seconds of love to each one of them. Ten seconds of love to any friend who's going through a hard time and needs some extra support, extra energy. Think of one such friend. 10 seconds of love to any human or animal anywhere who's hungry and not sure where the next meal will come from. 2 more from the group. Somebody say 10 seconds of love too. Anyone who's in pain. all the children in the world. Space surrounding us, supporting us. Two more.
10 seconds of love to anyone who feels unloved.
Anyone feeling unloved. One more.
10 seconds of love to all of you.
And we'll chant 9 times this beautiful phrase. I'll say it the first time, you repeat it up. You say it along with me the next time onwards. It's basically, the phrase means happiness to all beings in every dimension, every direction. I'll say it the first time, after that join me. We'll do it together. Samastha loka sukhino bhavantu. 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 I've just come from Shirdi, so if you want a photograph of Sai Baba, you're welcome to have one or more. And with that, we conclude today's session. Thank you very much to the entire ArtSphere family. All right, thank you very much.
One small announcement, everyone. Please mention your name and email at the outside. The book. And we are taking soon some Nitya Shanti's 2 days workshop, maybe.
Yes.
We'll let you know that update. Thank you so much for being here.
Also, the following weekend, there's a workshop. So once you give your details, we will send you all the details. All right. If you want any one of these 2 photographs, you can take them. Thank you.